Living Coherence and Neuropsychiatric Disease is a comprehensive academic white paper proposing a transdiagnostic life process framework that integrates biological regulation, felt experience, and social context into a 7 primitives clinical grammar.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to jump right into the feedback here, because while the philosophical strength of this piece is just immense, we really need to look at the structural layout.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely where we need to start.
Right.
Because right out of the gate, I mean, we are looking at an incredibly robust theoretical engine here.
Oh, monumental.
Right? The author has done something really special by linking these raw biological first principles to human suffering. But I do wonder if the reader is being asked to wait way too long to see how that engine actually drives the car, you know?
Exactly. Reordering the presentation of theory and practice could significantly amplify the paper's clinical impact.
Yes.
Because I found myself reading the first portion of this paper, getting deeply immersed in the philosophy and the biological foundations.
Which are dense.
Very dense. And I was constantly asking myself, like, how do I use this?
Right. Because the weakness here is really that the 7 primitives clinical grammar, which is arguably the most original and actionable tool in the entire paper, is just buried.
It's all the way down in section 10.
Exactly. By prioritizing this linear derivation of biological first principles, like autopoiesis and structural coupling, the paper basically requires a clinical reader to wade through extensive abstract theory.
Yeah, they have to understand the cellular mechanisms of life before they can even grasp how this framework directly helps the patient sitting right in their office.
Right, and it's like a brilliant architect explaining the chemical composition of the concrete for 50 pages before actually showing us the blueprint of the house.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy. Because I can see why the author structured it this way. I mean, logically, it's very satisfying to start with the definition of life and build upwards.
The foundation, then the walls, then the roof.
Exactly. But psychologically, for a busy clinician who's seeing back-to-back patients in these grueling hour-long trauma sessions,
they're exhausted.
They are. So our suggestion here to fix this would be to invert or interweave the structural flow so that the practical clinical utility serves as the immediate hook.
Yeah, you have to introduce that 7 primitives clinical grammar much earlier to anchor the reader. And then, you know, you can unpack the biological first principles as the operating system that runs beneath those practical primitives.
Right. And there are a few concrete ways to actually execute this shift. Just as one option, you could pull a condensed version of the panic after bereavement vignette.
Oh, that vignette is so good.
It's incredible, but right now it sits in section 11.
Yeah.
So pull that up and place it directly in the introduction. Verbally walk the reader through it right away, using the 7 primitives to formulate the case immediately.
Show us the grieving patient right at the start.
Yes. Show us exactly how the patient's margin for stress is entirely depleted by grief.
Mm-hmm.
Their state is hyper-aroused. And then a minor disturbance, like, I don't know, a missed phone call, triggers a catastrophic perception, leading to a panic attack, which is just a desperate regulation attempt.
When you lay it out like that, I mean, the clinician instantly sees how this model organizes the chaotic presentation of panic.
And once they see that blueprint, they are hooked.
Right. And then another option for execution, when you do get to the biology, like section 4 on autopoiesis, frame it not just as a biology lesson, but as the direct theoretical answer to a clinical question.
Oh, I like that.
Right? So instead of just defining autopoiesis, you ask the reader, why is checking for sleep and nutrition margin the non-negotiable first step in our 7 primitives grammar?
And the answer is autopoiesis.
Exactly. Because the living unity is fundamentally threatened at a cellular level. It transforms abstract biology into urgent clinical reality.
It creates this powerful need-to-know dynamic. But moving the blueprint to the front page doesn't really solve the core issue if the blueprint is written in ancient Greek, right?
Oh, man. The vocabulary.
Yeah, which brings us to the actual language used in the text. A firmer epistemic bridge between systems biology terminology and standard psychiatric vocabulary would make the framework more accessible to mainstream clinicians.
Yeah, because the weakness here is that the paper relies so heavily on an inactive and systems biology lexicon, words like autopoiesis, structural coupling, emotioning.
Emotioning, right?
And while these are philosophically precise, this vocabulary really risks alienating readers who are steeped in DSM or RDoC paradigms.
They might just mistakenly dismiss the whole framework as mere semantic relabeling rather than an actual functional clinical breakthrough.
Right. I mean, is there a risk that introducing a term like emotioning feels like we're asking a Windows user to suddenly navigate a Linux interface without a translation manual?
That's exactly what it feels like. Because when mainstream psychiatrists encounter words they don't normally use for, you know, insurance billing or legal liability, their default operational stance is skepticism.
Absolutely. They'll just think, oh, this is just a fancy new word for something I already know.
Right. Like if I read structural coupling, my instinct is to think, okay, you mean a psychosocial stressor, a toxic boss. Why not just say psychosocial stressor?
Yes, exactly. So our suggestion here is to actively map the new and active vocabulary directly to the contemporary biomedical language that the audience already trusts.
Mm-hmm.
Explicitly demonstrate what the new terms clinically afford that the old standard terms do not, proving that these concepts are functional upgrades rather than just, you know, poetic alternatives.
Right. We have to build that bridge so they don't build their own reductive one. And there are a few ways to build this bridge in the text. For instance, when defining structural coupling, the author could add a comparative sentence detailing exactly how it differs from a standard DSM psychosocial stressor.
Oh, that's crucial. Because a standard stressor in psychiatry is usually seen as an external force acting on a passive patient, right? It's a static noun.
Exactly. But structural coupling highlights a recurrent history where the organism and the medium mutually specify each other.
It's a dynamic feedback loop. A toxic workplace isn't just happening to the patient. It's altering their biological readiness, while the patient's narrowed regulatory strategies are co-creating their experience of that workplace.
Spot on. And alternatively, to really make this visual, the author could create a brief translation matrix or a table early in the paper.
I love the idea of a matrix.
Right? You juxtapose a term like emotioning directly against the standard psychiatric concept of, say, affective action tendencies, highlighting the specific diagnostic blind spots the new term illuminates.
That would be a massive aha moment for the reader. Because if a standard approach views an emotion merely as a private internal feeling state that you just need to medicate.
Right.
Emotioning redefines it as a bodily domain of possible action. Anger opens the domain of boundary defense. Shame opens the domain of hiding.
Yes. And if you put those side by side in the translation matrix, the clinician immediately sees the upgrade. They realize they aren't just trying to make the patient feel less ashamed. They are trying to reopen domains of action that shame has closed off.
It proves it's a higher resolution lens, not just academic jargon.
Exactly, which perfectly sets up the ultimate test of the paper. Because if we've moved the blueprint to the front and we've translated the language, we now have to prove that this new lens actually changes the treatment outcome on the ground.
This is the big one.
Yeah. The reframing of specific disorder families would be more compelling if it explicitly demonstrated where standard biopsychosocial treatments fail without this exact lens.
Right, because when you look at Section 11, which applies the framework to specific disorders like depression, PTSD, OCD, the descriptions are beautiful.
So beautiful.
But the weakness is that the suggested repair directions like restore safety, sleep, trauma repair, they read as remarkably similar to what a standard, competent biopsychosocial approach already dictates.
Yeah, it unintentionally dilutes the perceived originality of the framework. It makes it seem like a really complex new way to describe very old treatments.
Exactly. It feels a bit like prescribing a revolutionary new engine, but then suggesting we just drive to the exact same grocery store.
Right. If I'm an experienced clinician reading the PTSD section and it essentially tells me to pursue trauma-focused psychotherapy, I'm going to think, I've been doing that for 20 years. Why did I need a new framework for this?
Right. So the suggestion here is to highlight the friction points where the life coherence framework actively disagrees with, course corrects, or rescues a standard biomedical or purely psychosocial approach that has hit a dead end.
Show us the unique leverage this model provides.
We need to see the delta. We need to see the exact moment the old way stalls and the new way breaks through.
Absolutely. And as a few potential ways to implement this, let's take the OCD section. Instead of just stating that treatment respects the regulatory function, explicitly contrast this with a strict cognitive behavioral approach that might try to merely extinguish the compulsion.
Right, like a rigid exposure therapy where the therapist just says, don't wash your hands, sit with the anxiety, and the patient just feels massive shame and drops out.
Exactly. Show how the seven primitives model saves that stalled treatment plan. The model recognizes the hand washing not as a broken brain circuit, but as a desperate regulatory attempt to maintain viable living.
By validating the function of the compulsion, you immediately reduce the patient's shame and unstall the CBT failure.
Yes, and you could do the exact same thing in the depression section. Provide a brief scenario where standard SSRI and CBT protocols completely fail.
Which we see all the time. The standard paradigm is out of options and just suggests increasing the dosage.
Right, but mapping the patient's structural coupling reveals a severe environmental constraint, like they are trapped in a highly exploitative work environment. The CBT therapist might say, challenge your negative thoughts about work.
But the life coherence model reveals that the exhaustion isn't a cognitive distortion. It's a structural constraint. The medium itself is non-viable.
And that shifts the entire treatment focus from altering internal brain chemistry to executing external community advocacy. It proves you need the specific paradigm to rescue cases that standard treatments fail.
That is such a powerful way to frame it.
It really is. So, just to briefly synthesize everything we've talked about today. The underlying theory of this white paper is phenomenal and highly needed in modern psychiatry.
Absolutely.
But to maximize its impact, the focus should be on bringing the clinical tools to the forefront, translating the specialized vocabulary, and drawing a sharper contrast with standard treatment protocols.
Right. So, summarizing the actionable suggestions here. Number one, move the seven primitives clinical grammar and a clinical vignette to the front of the paper to anchor the theory in immediate practice.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, provide explicit translation matrices or comparative definitions that map terms like autopoiesis to standard DSM or RDoC concepts.
And number three?
Revise the disorder family sections to highlight specific clinical scenarios where a standard biopsychosocial approach fails, but the life coherence model succeeds.
Exactly. We warmly invite the author to implement these structural and thematic tweaks and submit the revised paper back to us for another critique. We are incredibly excited to see the next iteration of this groundbreaking work.